Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
The last thing they saw was someone they trusted. You're tuned in to Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi, featuring retired FBI special agent and chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, Robin Dreeke.
The trial of Richard Allen, as of this recording, it is still going on. By the time you hear or watch this, there may, in fact, be a verdict. The defense is just rested as of our recording here. It has been a fascinating trial from everything that we've understood, not having access to the courtroom with cameras or video or audio. We have had some very interesting reporting coming out. Bob Mata of Defense Diaries has been in there. We've been following his reporting throughout to all of this. And of course, we will talk with him very soon and get his reviews on what it was like at the second half of this. Right now, though, Robin Dreeke, retired FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, joining us once again to kind of get a thought on this as it's about to go to a jury. The defense, they didn't spend a ton of time using their platform, but they certainly had a lot to say counter to the prosecution while it was going in. The psychiatrists were very interesting. You had the one from the prosecution side who had a lot of issues going on with leaking information left and right. And it wasn't on the up and up. And then you had the defense psychiatrist that has come in and said, you know what? Yeah, the fact that he was eating the Bible, running into the wall, and his own feces were on the menu as well. It probably wasn't all there. I don't think he was psychologically sound, probably psychotic at the time. I don't think it needs a defense expert for us to know that. What are your thoughts on all of this? And then how that plays into the big question of credibility and making 60 plus confessions behind bars while he was in that state.
Yeah, I am still solid on what I'm thinking with what we've seen so far, Tony. I love changing my mind. I love that being surprised that by new evidence or new things that are revealed and saying, oh, I got it wrong. You know, let's shift. Mm-hmm. Believe it or not, I enjoy those moments because they're learning moments.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But we do not have that yet. In my mind, mm-hmm. I still am solid the fact that I don't see a behavior arc in him that says this is the type of behavior he would do. Mm-hmm. And then when it comes to confessions, what the psychiatrist for the defense highlighted to me is what's really, really relevant when it comes to these confessions. She talks about the duress he's under. It talks about the effects of isolation and all the horrendous things he was doing. He talks himself, remember, at the first interview and slash interrogation about his suicidal thoughts. So I did the research on this. I don't have the exact percentages, but the only thing I'm thinking of is suicide by cop kind of mentality. Mm-hmm. Like everyone can Google for themselves. How often does someone falsely confess because they're suicidal? Mm-hmm. You know, in other words, I just want out of the pain. And it actually is more common than you'd think. People will confess to crimes they didn't commit, especially murders, in times when they are just trying to get out of the pain.
Yeah.
And when you look at the details of his confession, it reads like it read in the newspaper. I didn't see anything that was very, very sweeping, very paintbrushy, nothing that he would have heard from someone else, especially cops that are interrogating him poorly, that probably gave him leakage on the details and things like that, that he would have used to just get out of the pain, just use this opportunity to just end it. Maybe he thought I'd give myself the death penalty, maybe I'll just end it. Because he was suicidal before he even went in there, according to his words.
Yeah.
So again, when you couple that with bad investigation and just nothing solid except a bullet casing that, again, the defense came in with another expert saying, what?
Yeah.
Nah, doesn't quite fit.
And I think it's interesting to identify what pain means, because I think a lot of people have different identifications of what that can mean for someone, what it can make someone do. And it probably has a lot to do with what one's own story is, what one went through in their life as pain. And when they judge other people saying they're in pain, going, Well, you ain't seen nothing yet if they've been through something far worse. But this also, I think, really speaks, though, to the misunderstanding or lack of understanding that we have of mental health in our country and how painful and damaging that can be. It doesn't mean he's out in the general population getting beat up every day or what. He's in a cell that he can't move around in. No human interaction for years. That's pain. That's such horrible mental anguish that very likely led him to act out the way that he did. But I don't know that everyone equates that to pain. There's a lot of people that will look at that and go, oh, he's just acting. He's doing whatever he needs to do to get out of this. There's a point in the human mind where it's like, no, they're not acting. They're going nuts because their brain is trying to survive or get out.
Yeah, you know, it's so funny. We were just talking about this on the other segment.
Yeah.
You know, the things I read, because I read a lot of survival types books, especially when it comes to exploration. Yeah. And I just got done with Madhouse at the End of the Earth, the story of the Belgica is the story of the Belgian ship that first got trapped in Antarctica in late 1800s, early 1900s. And they called it the Madhouse at the End of the Earth for a reason. What we as a species, as an organism on this planet, go through with a few things is profound. It's why NASA does massive studies. One of the greatest hurdles for going to Mars is, one, technology, two, and the technology to deal with the radiation. But the big studies that they're doing is the effects of human isolation. That's why they do the U.S., you know, the International Space Station to study all these things. Because Madhouse at the End of the Earth, people were literally losing their minds because of no sunlight, in isolation. And this is isolation with 12 people on a boat. Mm-hmm. And it was still considered isolation with food that came out of cans and a lack of sunlight, which is huge on a psychological effect. Then when you put that duress of our physiology in coupling with what he was most likely, who knows, I'm not a psychiatrist or a psychologist, but most likely as he's self-describing depression beforehand that he told the cops during interrogation, the likelihood that he already has chemical imbalances, which is a massive thing to deal with that psychological trauma of the isolation and the lack of sunlight. And I can't believe he is well off as he is because of those things. He's most likely very resilient and durable because of those things, because that is a massive assault on our senses.
Yeah, he managed to come out of it. You know, the way he's acting in court, from most accounts, Bob, who's been in there, there's been some people that say he's acting a little bit, but Bob's been watching me like, I don't know, he looks like any client I've ever had interacting with me. Right. So I'm taking his word for it that it's not a lot that's going, you know, weird here in the courtroom with him. Let's talk about one more piece on this that was presented by the defense. And they, in my opinion, they've done a very good job of introducing a lot of reasonable doubt in this case. And this is something they revealed at the very end. It has to do with the cell phone of Libby German. And we had known for a while that there was a record that this cell phone turned off, turned on, started receiving messages in the middle, later in the day, several hours after the girls were believed to have been dead. But the defense now presented evidence showing a headphone jack was inserted into Libby German's phone 5 hours after her disappearance, pretty much showing that the phone was handled later than originally thought. So somebody had the phone. Were the girls even dead yet? I mean, were they hauled around? They did introduce evidence that said they don't believe they died in the space that they died. You can't argue with the technology either that's saying this headphone went in there. That's there. It's just a fact. It happened. Who did it? How did it happen? If they were alive, I mean, it could very well have been one of the girls. If they were like locked away somewhere and they had their headphone jacked, she could have plugged it in. What do you make of that? I mean, because, and there's no explanation. It's just, they threw it out there for the jury to go, there's a little more reasonable doubt. How well do you think something like that's going to play?
I think it's more good data points for reasonable doubt. I think this entire case defense is showing that we got a lot of reasonable doubt.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to flip it back to the true victims that are still with us, and that's the family.
Yeah.
No matter what happens at this point, they're going to have, I would have doubt. I don't know, you know, I can't be them. Because I haven't been through this trauma they have, but I would have a lot of doubt, sure, even if he's convicted. Even if it's a unanimous conviction by the jury. on everything, on all counts, whatever. I mean, I personally would have a lot of doubt because I got doubt now.
Yeah.
And we've really been trying to get everything that the jury's been seeing. Again, we're not in the courtroom, so we don't taste it, touch it, feel it the same way, experience it like they have. But I can't believe they haven't made a bigger deal of his life before this event to show the lack of behavior arc in him to do such crimes. Because everyone that keeps making all the comments on social media, well, it's just this, it's just sexual assault, or it's just a control issue. Okay, you're right. It is all those things. Show me how that ties to him.
Yeah, exactly. People like this don't just pop one day and go, I'm going to go sexually assault some kids in the woods and then go back to living a completely different life. like one that doesn't have any of that in it whatsoever. 23 devices. There's nothing that was found on any of them that points to any of that sort of material. The best they found was that he Googled the case, which he's in a small town. Of course, you're going to Google the case that's affecting your area for many, many years. Lots of reasonable doubt here. A lot of challenges to the firearms evidence. I mean, the bullet science is not that much of a science. Cross-examination of the experts, a lot of challenges to their credibility and their experience. It's just, there's so much. I'm going to be honestly surprised at this point if we do get a guilty verdict.
Right.
I could see a hung jury or I can see not guilty. At the end of the day, it doesn't help those families if it's a hung jury.
Doesn't.
I mean, it doesn't help them, I think, almost in any direction. Because I agree. I think if I was a parent here, those are one of my kids, I'd be really... Of course, you want justice, but you don't want to lock away somebody who didn't do this. I think you're left there going, wow, the people I trusted to find the killer really didn't do a great job of, if this is the person, truly proving it is, or doing their job to actually find the real one. They went down this road too quick or because they had no other options after not finding anything.
Yeah, as a parent, justice, boy, that's a tricky word. Different people want justice in different ways.
Yep.
If this was my kids, I would, at this point, since they're already gone, I would want to know how they went.
Yep.
And hopefully it was painless and hopefully it was without fear. I mean, because that's all you can really hope for. They're gone. They were murdered.
Yeah.
And I would just want someone competent enough to tell me what happened. That's all I want to know at this point. I just want to know what happened. And I want to know that the person that did that crime, does the time in whatever capacity that winds up being. And I just don't think it's going to happen yet.
I agree. One of my biggest pet peeves that I have all the time is when you're into something serious or urgent or you need to get something done is incompetence with people along the line that need to be doing the job where they should be competent on. I can't imagine what a headache that is.
You know, and we all have those moments. We all have moments of making mistakes. Mm-hmm. I'm with you on this one. When you are incompetent by ignorance, mm-hmm. you didn't know better, you don't have much time, they've never dealt with a murder before, whatever it is, okay, own it,
yep.
fix it, and try again.
Yep.
But when you double down on how incompetent you are, that's when people lose faith. People aren't looking for perfection, they're looking for progress, they're looking for an effort, they're looking for transparency, and we didn't get any of that on this case.
No. We certainly did not. Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, chief of the counterintelligence behavioral analysis program, and yes, author of this book, which is also the graphics hanging behind his head. It is very good. I'm just beginning to get into the audiobook version, but I love it. I loved all of your books so far. Sizing People Up, another great one, by the way. Check it out wherever you get your books and learn to be a smarter, better human being from the mind of Robin Drake. Always a pleasure. Thank you, Robin.
Thank you, Tony.
Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
You're in the thick of a true crime saga, every detail sinking in. And then, wham, a commercial about something you couldn't care less about. It's like being served a microwaved dinner at a 5-star restaurant. But it doesn't have to be this way. Go for True Crime Today, Premium Plus, on Apple Podcasts. With True Crime Today Premium Plus, you get uninterrupted, ad-free episodes, extended interviews that dig even deeper into the muck, and early access so you can brag to your friends. It's like ordering the secret menu at a crime buffet. So, search for True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and savor every twisted detail without interruption.